Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, Lions they had a rough one against the Vikings on Sunday. They lost 42-30. So you were right. If both teams, if only one team cracks 17 points, the Lions are going to win. And that's not what happened. They went well over that, and so the Lions lost.
Yeah, shootout was not a wise approach.
No, and
I don't think they had a choice. But yeah, I think we'll get into that. I guess.
Yeah. And some things have happened during the week, and like the game has now become really secondary to the Lions story this week. Oddly enough, with the trade of Quandre Diggs, we'll talk about that in a second as well. We'll first start with the injury report. Number one, this is what everybody would have thought would be the biggest news of the week, is that Kerryon Johnson has been placed on injured reserve. He's available to come back in week 14?
16, yeah. Yeah, and in my mind, this move is probably still the most impactful thing that they've done this week. And again, no disrespect to Quandre, but the depth at safety is different than the depth at running back. The depth at running back is
thin.
Zach
Zenner's gone.
And he did not return. He was picked up by another team again, so he will not be back. Arizona picked him up.
Wow.
So losing Kerryon Johnson, I think, has the potential to be a much bigger deal than I think people are paying attention to, because we're so focused on Darius Slay in the locker room and Quandre Diggs over in Seattle, and we're so focused on that I think we're missing
the fact that we can't run the football. Well, and now we don't have our best running back to help us run the football.
Right, and you have your starting running back is now a 6th round draft pick, and the 3 reserves that you have are all guys that you used a waiver claim to acquire. J.D. McKissic, Perkins, and Trey Carson are all guys that they used waiver wire claims on to get. That is not reassuring, I guess, is the best way to put it. Now, you've seen potential from Ty Johnson, and so you're hoping that
he can be the bell cow.
He can, yeah, or at least he can carry them through.
Impact the game with a good amount of touches.
And we're not ruling out a possible trade, and we can talk about that if you want a little bit later. But losing Kerryon has the potential to be a pretty big deal, because even if they use a running back by committee approach, which is really their plan, Ty's going to be the first one to get the carries. McKissic is very good at a role player, but he shouldn't be a guy that's getting number 2 snaps. He should be running back 3, and that's a fine role for him. But if you're leaving McKissic in that running back 3 role, well, is it Trey Carson? Is it Paul Perkins? Who's that number 2? And I don't know if we're really confident in either of those two. So even if Ty Johnson pans out, that's a big ask to ask him to replace Kerryon. So it's going to be a tough spot. I think we're gonna see a shift in philosophy, where they're going to have to go to the air more.
Well, which I don't know if that's a shift. It's a shift in philosophy, but at the same time, they only rushed for 81 yards on Sunday on 20 carries.
Right. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think we're going to see an abandoning of the run. I don't think that's going to happen. I still think they're going to be focused on trying to stay as balanced as they can. They're still going to run the ball, because they're still going to want to keep things in play. They're still going to want to keep defenses honest. But it sure looks like path to points runs through the passing game, which I mean is something that's happened all season, right? But it's going to be much harder to move the ball on the ground. Now, maybe not so much this week, and we'll get into that when we preview the Giants, but this is a big move. I think the team, the offense is it's going to take a more significant hit than people are really thinking about right now. We'll see if Ty Johnson can live up to the billing. Now, if there's one position on an NFL roster where an undrafted or late round guy can step up and then just be gangbusters, it's running back, right? We've seen it around the league all the time. So maybe Ty Johnson can prove us wrong, but the path is definitely going to be more challenging offensively.
All right, Mike Daniels still has his foot injury. He was out in the middle of the week, and now here we are on Thursday.
But fortunately, today he returned to the practice field for the first time. So he was limited today. It's the first time he's actually practiced since week three, right, when he was injured. So that it's a step in the right direction, and it means that maybe there's a timeline, you know, for him to get back onto the field on a permanent basis. But that could still be a while away. We could still be looking at a week or two or even more where before he's ready to come back and be fully capable. But the fact that he's getting at least limited practices is encouraging that his path to the field is going to be shorter now that he's starting to come back.
A young man who could possibly see more use in the offense is Nick Bodden. And yeah. He was out Wednesday, but he returned today.
What's interesting about Bowden is that he was a late addition to last week's injury report with a back injury, went into the game, played the game. Now he no longer has a back injury, but he has a foot injury. And that caused him to miss a practice. So I don't know how this is going to affect Bowden. You know, it's two separate injuries in less than 2 weeks, and they're limiting his ability to practice. I think it will limit his ability to play in the game, but he still might be available.
All right, flipping back over to the defense, Amani Oruwariye with his knee. He's been in practice.
Yeah, he was out the last 2 weeks. Now he's been limited. Good sign for his development, but with the depth they have at corner, they're not going to rush him. And even if he was healthy, there's still no guarantee he would be a game day active, because the first few weeks of the season he wasn't active and he was fully healthy then. So it's good for his development, though, that he's getting back on the field.
All right. Deshaun Hand, defensive lineman, he might be coming back.
Yeah. Full practice Friday, full practice Wednesday, full practice Thursday. He'll probably get a full practice in tomorrow based on what we've seen from him.
Play still, on Sunday?
Still might be questionable, but I think he's a lot more likely to play on Sunday than we had originally thought. I would actually, at this point, I would be surprised if he did not play more than if he was ruled out. Last week, I was still not overly surprised he was ruled out. This week, I would be surprised if he was ruled out. I'm expecting him to play.
Damian Harrison. Damon Harrison, excuse me. Snacks Harrison.
So he was injured in the game. Groin injury, left the game, came back, played full practice on Wednesday. Looks like he's a rest day today. He didn't practice, but that sure looks like a rest. I don't think there's anything to read more into that. It's he will most likely be back tomorrow full and then should be ready to go against his former team in the Giants. If he doesn't practice or if he's limited tomorrow, then you raise a little bit of concern. But this looks like a rest day.
The new Ziggy Ansah, Matthew Stafford, still on the injury report with the hip. He'll, of course, play no matter what.
Yeah, well, but Ziggy
although
never,
unlike Ziggy, yeah. But Matthew's been on the injury report every week.
Yeah, every week, hip injury, still practicing in full, still plays on the game. I don't think there's any worries there.
Although worries in Seattle because Ziggy Ansah is day-to-day with an ankle injury. Finally, the big one, Darius Slay missed practice yesterday. I also missed practice today. We could always say it was his hamstring, but it may not be.
Yeah, so hamstring injuries only get better with rest. And he's had this hamstring injury now for 4 weeks. And he had it ahead of the bye where he missed. During the bye, he was fine. Or he had it during the bye. But then he returned to game action the previous 2 weeks. This could very easily be a let's just let you get a week's some rest here, make sure that you're fully healthy for the game. Or this could also be a, hey, we know you're mad that we just traded your best friend and locker mate away, and so we're going to take it a little easy with you and let you get a little bit out of, you know, a little bit loose with the lips and let you just sit there and kind of let some steam off, I guess. But I think this is probably more injury-related more than them, like, coddling him, I guess.
Either way, not a good sign.
Yeah, we'll see what happens tomorrow. If he doesn't play tomorrow, he won't play on Sunday. That's pretty much the way the league operates. So he could also be back in full on Friday and then ready to go on Sunday, so that's kind of where I'm leaning.
All right, roster moves, we already mentioned it. Quandre Diggs is traded to the Seattle Seahawks, where he'll be reunited with Ziggy Ansah for we also packaged a 7th round pick, I believe, a couple of years from now.
2021.
And we receive back a 5th round pick in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, and it seems very minimal, the compensation.
Yeah, for team captain and a guy starter. With a pretty big contract.
You don't lose starters mid-season.
Snacks Harrison.
Right, and when you do, there's usually a money reason. Like the Giants moved on from Snacks for a cheap deal because it was financially incentive for them to move on for him, right? And there is an argument to be made that you're moving on from Quandre from a financial standpoint because he was due to make more money, and next year due to get a pretty hefty pay increase, and maybe they wanted to get out from under that. And they thought this was the only way they could get money. It's possible that there were other factors going on behind the scenes that facilitated this move. But you know, safeties don't get a lot of value, you know, and so this isn't. I feel that he was undervalued. I feel like the compensation is undervalued. It's sad to see Quandre go because he's a very good person, a very nice personality. He was having a very down year. As a last line of defense, and you need to be a reliable tackler. He has 6 missed tackles on the season, which is, I think, leading the team. That's not what you want out of your safety valve. Also, free safety in this scheme is someone that is expected to make impact plays, make pass breakups, be a ball hawk, go get the ball, get turnovers. He has none of those, no big plays, no turnovers, no pass breakups. Those are all, and so it was a down year. Now, personally, I thought he's worth keeping around to rebound. But from a team standpoint, they felt it was time to give the next guy up a chance. And I did a film study of the last couple of games to look at specifically how they were deploying their safeties. The basic bottom line that I came up with was they used Tracy Walker as a chess piece. They split his time between 4 different roles. Between 5 different roles, mostly having him in slot coverage and at the linebacker level and at the strong safety level, but he does drop into the free safety roles about a third of the time as well. So he's most impactful when he's position flexible. That's the key to him. The other safeties, they have more specific roles. Quandre Diggs was like almost 3/4 of the time he played free safety, and that was it. Same thing with Will Harris. 3/4 of the time, he's playing 3 safety. 3/4 of the time with Tavon Wilson, he's playing strong safety or that kind of joker role that they do. So none of them have that flexibility that Tracy Walker has. And so in order to keep Tracy flexible, you need to have these other safety roles in place. And by moving on from Quandre, you're moving on from a player who is playing 75% of his time at free safety. Well,
the
player that was also filling that exact same role is Will Harris, and Will Harris is not missing tackles, and he is getting pass breakups. He's not as instinctive. He hasn't proven it the way that Quandre has, but he's longer, he's more athletic, and they believe that he has the upside to fill this role. And so my guess is that they're going to turn over almost all of Quandre's snaps to Will Harris. I do think Tavon Wilson will see an uptick in his role as well because he's the veteran and they want to rely on him as they want to lean on him as well, especially while Will Harris is developing. But this sure looks like they're ready to move on with Will Harris based on moving on from Quandre. So it looks like it's going to be the Will Harris show. They're going to give the rookie a lot of attention. And we'll see if it's the right move. We really won't know for a while. We'll know in 10 games, I mean, if it was the right move or not. But But it is what it is at this point.
Curse Doctrine states Will Harris now the most likely Lion to get injured next. Just to throw that out there, we'll see what happens with that.
Well, fortunately, they've made some moves to counter that.
All right, so we'll get to that in a second. Paul Perkins, as you mentioned, been promoted to the active roster because they're going to have to use him at this point. Mm. Running back Wes Hills was brought back to the practice squad.
Yeah, I mean, these are expected moves. It'd be interesting to see if they activate Paul Perkins this week because he's a former Giant and he understands their defense.
There we go.
And it's very possible that he is the third running back because you might go Ty Johnson, McKissick, and then Paul Perkins, and you leave Trey Carson on the bench, who's only been with this team for about 10 days now.
Only play him against the Packers.
No. I'm not saying only.
No, I'm joking. Jeez, Sarah.
Sorry, I'm being very literal today.
Yeah, well, we had a little spat before the podcast started.
But I do think Carson's only 10 days in an organization. Paul Perkins is almost a month in the organization. So, and being the fact that he's familiar with the Giants, you might see Paul Perkins active this week. You might see Trey Carson active next week. I think that RB3 role is fluid at this point. But who knows? I mean, they seem to like Carson better because they had him on the active roster over Perkins. But the Giants bring an interesting wrinkle into the Perkins activity this week.
All right, finally they signed safety Marcus Gilchrist, and you kind of half alluded to this a minute ago.
Yeah, you know, I think... Okay, so Marcus Gilchrist has like 90-plus starts in the NFL. He's very seasoned. He's 30 years old. He'll be 31 in December. And he's played free safety, strong safety, and corner. And he's has started at all of those spots in the NFL. In my mind, at this age, what he's probably best suited for is the same role that Tavon Wilson kind of has. He will come in and he'll probably be the fourth safety because all he has to do is beat out C.J. Moore, who I think is the guy they're training at like free safety now behind Will Harris. I think Gilchrist is going to be behind Tavon Wilson. Now, if Will Harris goes down, then I think Wilson will then have to take over the Harris role of the deep free safety. Then you might see Gilchrist up into that third safety, which is mostly in the box and slot coverage type things that we currently see out of Wilson, that we might see out of Gilchrist. But I don't want Tavon Wilson back at free safety more than I have to, just because he's limited in his range. I would like to see Will Harris take that role over, but Gilchrist brings a lot of experience. He's got a lot of coverage ability. He got beat deep a lot last year when he was with the Raiders, but he started all 16 games for him at free safety. So there's things to like about him, but I mean, this is your fourth safety at best. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be like getting prominent playing time other than maybe on special teams.
All right, moving on from the additions, we're going to talk about the Vikings game. Once again, a 42-30 loss, a game in which the Lions hemorrhaged 504 yards defensively, but the Vikings played a very balanced game with 37 rushes and 34 passes, and they were effective in all facets of offense. And the Lions, at the same time, they were effective offensively throwing the ball themselves, and it starts with Marvin Jones, who continues carving up the Lions, this time to the tune of 10 receptions for 93 yards and 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, and he's always...
Career high.
He's always
been... Tied Lions record.
He's always been a guy who has taken advantage of Xavier Rhodes. I mean, he's done it for a couple years now. But they tried Trey Waynes on him. He caught a touchdown in front of Trey Waynes. He caught a touchdown in front of Xavier Rhodes. He caught a touchdown in front of their first-round pick from 2 years ago. Blanking on his name. And then he caught a fourth touchdown on Xavier. That one was back on Xavier Rhodes. So he really showed his versatility. They tried multiple guys on him, and they really didn't have an answer for him. And it's strange how these things happen, right? Like, certain guys just seem to play well against certain teams. And just like certain players play well against us, right?
Yeah,
certain,
Adam Thielen.
Right? And... yeah, for whatever reason.
Everson Griffin. Danelle Hunter.
Any former Lions skill player, right?
That too.
But
Joey Harrington.
But Marvin is a—he's a Viking. He does Viking killer. I was gonna say Viking killer, and I paused.
More famous when you talk about baseball teams, but the adage works here.
Yeah, but he is he is very good at beating them. So kudos to Marvin for his big game.
All right, Stafford played better than he was really given credit for. 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, still rather effective.
Yeah, and he's...
1 boneheaded throw on 4th down. We'll leave that be.
That was a bad play call, right?
Yeah, he tried to force it. He should have tried to force it in there somewhere else.
I honestly don't know. I need to go back and look at that play because I don't think I really paid that much attention because that was just when I rewatched the game. I knew what was coming, and I knew the bonehead play that was coming, and I just was like, why do I want to watch this disaster again? But I watched. I need to probably go back and look and see, was there another outlet? I don't know what the other outlet was because they rolled that way.
That was the option. That's why I threw it at.
They pigeoned,
I understand
that.
That
was terrible. That was a bad play call.
30 for 45, 364.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's not terrible. A lot of people really got down on him for that game, and I thought he played.
He was the only thing keeping him in the game, it seemed.
I agree with that. And so, I thought he was not getting the credit he probably was due.
All right, so Vikings running game worked and led to many play-action throws for Kirk Cousins, who ended up with 338 yards passing.
The theme of the locker room after the game was... We had no answer to their play action because because
they were effective running the ball.
And they got
Dalvin
caught.
Cook had 142 yards on the ground.
And they just got caught looking in the backfield all day. And when you look at the snap counts, there was a big shift in the types of personnel that they used. And what they did was they went away from the edge rushers and added more linebackers, but they also, by adding more linebackers, you were using less defensive backs. So it was very contrary to the other 5 games that they played, which seemed to
load up defensive backs.
Right, exactly. And so there was a focus to try and take the run away, but instead of using edge rushers on the edge, they were using linebackers on the edge, and those linebackers were not holding the edge, which then caused a breakdown. And what was the most shocking to me was that there was no adjustment. They didn't seem to adjust that at all.
It's not very shocking.
No, but one of the keys that this defense has done in the past is they've adapted. And they've found ways to adapt in the previous games and alter things. And there was no change. They stuck with like a 4 linebacker front for most of the time, and it just didn't work. And if anything, I thought they should have probably started putting more safeties out there and then taking linebackers off the field and trying to get more defensive ends up front. And it was a very interesting strategy that was a divergent from what we've seen. And I think it's a big reason why they were so leaky moving through that game.
All right, and that's about enough about that game. Nobody can be too happy with that performance. We were all probably hoping for something a little better than that, especially coming off of a couple of hard luck losses. But yeah.
No, I was going to say, we talked briefly about this before the podcast as well, that they were in this game late. But the problem was that the defense just couldn't answer.
Kept giving it up.
And when the defense can't answer,
they couldn't put themselves right back in the middle of it.
Yeah, but I mean, they were still in this game very late, even though it felt like a demoralizing loss. I don't think it's as... On my rewatch, I didn't feel as bad about it as I did when I watched it live.
This is why we love his optimism. Moving on to the Giants game, hopefully we'll have a better outcome in this one. The Giants are 2-5. Las Vegas feels the Lions they feel they're favored by 6.5. The referee, Scott Novak, did he already do a game with us this season?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. That's a good question. I didn't think to look that up.
Low average penalties per game, 12.57.
Yeah, almost two under what the league average is, so that's great.
TV, we're going to be on Fox. We're going to get Kenny Albert and Charles Davis, which are kind of the number one crew with Buck focused on baseball.
It's shocking that they're giving this crew to
The Giants are a popular team, and what Dallas must be playing later.
I didn't even look, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm going to peer at this real quick. Philadelphia, Buffalo, Chargers at Chicago, Seattle at Atlanta, Tampa Bay at Tennessee. Yeah, I guess. I don't know, I guess Philadelphia, Buffalo would probably be the best game out of that batch.
From a record standpoint, for sure.
All right. Last week, Giants lost to the Cardinals, who we tied. So, transitive property of football looks pretty good for us there.
Cardinals got out to a 17-point lead, let the Giants back in it, kicked field goals in the second half, and just held them off. Both teams basically tried to kind of give that game away, and Arizona was able to hold on at the end.
All right, so let's get into the team itself. Giants pretty much stink in all facets of the game. They're head coached by Pat Shurmur, who there was some talk a couple years ago that maybe he would be the next head coach of the Lions and not Matt Patricia. Mm-hmm. Offensive coordinator is Mike Shula, and that's where we'll start on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, what's interesting about this team is that they're in the bottom quarter of the league in most offensive stats, most defensive stats, special teams, and then even DVOA. They're in the bottom quarter of the league in pretty much everything. There's nothing really that you can say, this is what's really good about this team. They have skill players. I mean, they have players that can play. But for whatever reason, one thing or another, or a dozen reasons, it's not translating to wins, and they look, vulnerable in a lot of areas, even though they have talent. It's not a talent barren roster by any means, but they have not produced really in any remarkable way through this season so far.
This team's already played the Patriots, and we know how you feel about that. It's the blueprint for our own success against the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I rewatched the Patriots play them, which was a bit of a disaster. And then the Cardinals, Patrick Peterson came out and said, we watched what the Patriots did, and we just copied their defense. And that's what we did to beat them. And so you would expect that the Lions that play that exact same style of defense would copy that as well. And basically what they showed a lot of is a lot of cover two on first down, which means you're dropping both safeties. And then depending on what second and third down is, they're doing either like a cover one or a cover one robber. And they're trying to put some stress on the Giants. Now the Giants, when they get into like third and long, and I think their average is like 8 yards on third down, which is like seventh worst in the league or something like that, they're not successful. They're one of the worst teams at converting third downs in the league. And so I would expect the same type of solution where the Lions are going to use a bit of a zone early, stress on second down, and try and get them into third and long. And then just, play that, go back to what they've done previously, which is cover and allow the pressure to get there. Because one of the things about this quarterback is that he will hold on to the ball. And when he holds on to the ball, it allows, even if you're not able to generate pressure immediately, you can the pressure can get there if the coverage holds up, which is, I think, what they're going to turn back to.
It's one very frightening thing about this quarterback, and his name is Sam Darnold. Now, I know the name of the Giants quarterback's Daniel Jones, but he is a rookie. This is the first time we're going to see him, and the Lions do have a poor history against backup quarterbacks or rookie quarterbacks or quarterbacks making in their early exposure to being a starter. Mm-hmm.
So Daniel Jones took over in week 3 and lit the NFL on fire. Huge win, comeback win over Tampa. Then they go out the next week and they handle Washington like 30-6 or something ridiculous like that.
Two also poor teams.
Right?
And future Lion opponents.
And then they go out and lose the next 3. And Daniel Jones looks like a rookie. And he has three touchdowns, five interceptions over those three games. His passer rating went from 112 against Tampa to 78 against Washington, then into the mid-60s, then into the 30s against the Patriots. And then he was up in the 70s again, 78 against Arizona. But he had one game where he was over 100. One game where he was over 78.6. To give you some perspective, Matthew Stafford has not had a game where his QBR has been under 84 this whole year, right? And Jones has only had one game over 78.6. So it kind of speaks to where he's at. You know, can he be good? Sure. Is he good right now? Not really. He has no clock in his head for when he needs to get rid of the ball. He's not very apt at feeling pressure. When he sees pressure, he's okay, but when he doesn't feel the pressure coming. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Lions dial up a few linebacker blitzes just to keep him honest. But this is a guy who just holds on to the ball, and that
sacked
can be a problem.
Eight times against Arizona last week. He'll be a lot cleaner this week.
Yeah, but I still think he's going to end up on the ground for sure.
I hope you're right. All right, moving on to running back. Saquon Barkley has returned from injury. He's their best player.
Yeah, I think he's their best weapon. You know, even with an injured ankle, returning from that injured ankle last week, he still put up 72 yards and a touchdown. But he is a guy who always thinks he can get out of a play. So he will have plenty of runs where he'll go to the side and it'll be like a 2-yard loss. And by him trying to make things work, it'll end up being like a 10-yard loss. And then that puts them in really bad spots. And one of the big reasons why they end up in like third and long a lot is because they'll make those kind of bonehead moves where instead of just taking a 2-yard loss, it ends up being, you know, 10 or more. So he's still the guy that they're going to have to focus on. But I think they can attack Barkley without I think they're going to have a different approach. They're not going to sell out to stop Barkley like they did Dalvin Cook, because you saw that wasn't effective. But I do think they will attack him with your more traditional linebackers. I don't think we're going to see as many as we saw against Minnesota.
All right, moving on to the wide receiver position. It starts with old ex-Lion Golden Tate. Not that old yet, but ex-Lion Golden
Tate. You know what's interesting is that he started his career in Seattle, then he went to the Lions, and then they traded him to Philly. Now he's with the Giants. But more than once on the broadcast, when Golden Tate caught the ball, they said, former Lion, Golden Tate.
Well, they put up a big chunk of stats in the 4 years.
Right. I just find it interesting. I just thought it was unique that it stuck out like that. But he looks like Golden Tate. I mean, the only difference is that they're using him in motion, in pre-snap motion. They're bringing him around, like faking end-arounds with him. They're keeping him moving. But he's a great safety valve for Jones. He's a guy who can, he has reliable hands. He has great yak, obviously, we know that. And he's also doing punt returns for them now because their punt returner is hurt. So he's going to be a handful. I mean, he really is.
All right. Also, Sterling Shepard, he's still in concussion protocol. He hasn't played in the last 2 weeks. We'll also see Corey Latimer, Darius Slayton, and former Spartan Benny Fowler, in all likelihood, on Sunday.
Fowler caught 4 passes last week, even though he only played on like 30% of their snaps, which I found interesting. And they targeted him a couple more times, but he dropped them. Shepard is coming back from concussion, but there's no guarantee he'll be back. Latimer is one of their outside guys. And then they ended up relying on Darius Slayton last week with Shepard out. And Slayton played almost every snap. He's like a 6th-rounder, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So they're really kind of having to go. Their receivers.
Rounder.
Oh, 5th-round. Okay. They're really like, there's some talent, but it's young or it's not proven or, you know, and Shepard's should be is easily their second best receiver, but he might not play. So you've got Barkley, you've got Golden. After that, you're not overly concerned with the rest of that wide receiver crew.
Well, not, all right, maybe not concerned with the wide receiver crew, and maybe not so concerned with this guy, but tight end Evan Ingram.
Yeah, I think you should be concerned with him. He can be a mismatch. He's a great pass catcher. Not super blocker, but they have Red Ellison for that. He's kind of their version of Jesse James, and Ingram is if Hockenson only caught passes. You know what I mean? But Ingram's probably a more proven commodity, I guess, in that avenue than Hockenson is. So you've got to account for Barkley, you got to account for Golden, you got to account for Ingram. But Ingram, I think it would be a good matchup to see him on Tracy Walker, because I think Tracy can do some things with Ingram. And for whatever reason, Daniel Jones has not been able to find him as often as he should be. Instead of using the tight end like as that safety valve, like I said, it tends to be Golden Tate tends to be the guy he finds. So it'd be interesting. I think they might match up Justin Coleman on Golden Tate, and then Tracy Walker on Ingram, and then you can focus a lot of the other guys on Saquon and just let the pressure come and play good defense, play good coverage defense, and that's how you can attack these Giants.
Moving on to the offensive line, there are a couple of names on the offensive line, but it's not a great one. Starting Nate Solder at left tackle, more famous for his time with the Patriots.
Yeah, big contract, has not lived up to it, unfortunately. If they continue to roll out Trey Flowers on the right side, those two will face off. And it's something they would have done for years in New England. I would like to see them flex Flowers over to the other side.
Face off against Mike Remmers.
Correct. Because I think he can destroy Remmers.
Really don't like Mike Remmers, because I think wasn't he with the Vikings last year? And yeah, you would always say negative things about him, and the Vikings would defeat us.
Oh, it wasn't because of Remmers. I'll tell you that much. Remmers is not great. He got moved pretty easily against the Cardinals last game. If you put Kennard on him, I think Kennard can use his quickness to still have some effectiveness, but man, Flowers against Remmers is really something that I would love to see. That would be the match made in heaven. If you want to get pressure, I think that's how you do it. If you flop around a little bit of that interior and get Flowers on Remmers, that's something that I think you can have a lot of success with. Even if you're playing Flowers at that 4-eye, where he's on the inside shoulder of Remmers as opposed to the outside shoulder, and you just make some minor adjustments on the inside and maybe flip a defensive tackle to the other side, there's a way to get Flowers there that I think would be very beneficial to the Lions.
The guards are Will Hernandez and Kevin Zeitler. Hernandez's familiarity with Damon Harrison.
Yeah, they got into it Hernandez's year. A few weeks, or right at I think the end of minicamp or something, there's a story about Harrison grabbing Hernandez by the helmet and tearing it off of his head as a rookie. But it'll be interesting because they've faced off, so they are going to have some interesting matchups. I would like to see them try and drop snacks at the zero, though, directly over center John
Halapaio.
Because he's, I think, the weakest link on this roster. I know Remmers is not great, but Halapaio is really been underperforming. I think getting him one-on-one with Snacks as much as you can would be ideal.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, which is coordinated by James Betcher. Did you want to add something?
I was just going to say we didn't add Kevin Zeitler, the
right guard. Yeah, all right, sorry.
He's good. I think both their guards are good. Their tackles have struggled. Their centers struggled. But this is a better Giants line than we've seen in the past, but it's still not great.
All right, now on to James Betcher's defense.
Thank you.
They use a three-man line for the most part.
Yeah, they play a ton of nickel, right? And so it's going to be traditional nickel where you're putting three corners out there and two safeties, And so that allows them to use varying fronts with your linebackers and your defensive linemen. They have the ability to put three down defensive linemen at a time. Dexter Lawrence was a nose tackle at Clemson. B.J. Hill was a nose tackle at
Boston College.
I thought it was North Carolina State.
Okay, could be.
And then Dalvin Tomlinson.
Sammy Hill.
And then Dalvin Tomlinson played defensive tackle next to Snacks during their time together. And Dalvin also played at Alabama. So all three of these guys are very good two-gappers. They can play the five. They can play the nose. All three of them really can do that. But what they end up doing is they end up playing a lot of just two of them at a time. And the reason they'll play two of them at a time is because they have these other defensive end slash outside linebackers that they use to rush the passer. So, like, they basically have two down D linemen and then two kind of jack linebacker hybrids, kind of like two Devin Kennards out there. And they have three of these guys that they like to rotate through quite frequently, who can put their hands in the dirt or stand up and rush as well.
All right.
So those guys are Marcus Golden, who I believe was an Ole Miss guy or a Southern Miss guy.
Oh, here you are guessing everybody's college. You were right on B.J. Hill. He was North Carolina State.
I believe Golden, Southern Miss. Lorenzo Carter, I know, played at Georgia.
Yeah.
O'Shana Symes. It starts with an X. It's my fault. Third-round pick this year. He's getting a lot of work as a down defensive lineman and standing up as a pass rusher. They'll use a ton of these guys. What's interesting is there's a whole bunch of Georgia defenders on this roster.
Going next to the off-the-ball linebackers, I believe Alec Ogletree was a Georgia linebacker.
He was.
They also use Michael Thomas, David Mayo, and they just signed Deion Buchanan.
Michael Thomas is a
not the Michael Thomas you're thinking of.
Yeah, not the wide receiver from Ohio State that now plays for the Saints. Michael Thomas is a safety who also plays linebacker. So he's kind of in that Tavon Wilson role, or I people will also associate that with like Miles Killebrew type role, where he is a Pro Bowler on special teams. He blocked a punt that went for a touchdown last week for the Giants. And he gets snaps at kind of like that will linebacker off the ball type position. So he sees the field quite a bit. Mayo is more technically your other inside linebacker who's next to Ogletree, but Ogletree's really the prize guy on this off the ball linebacker defense here. Ogletree's there's a lot of upside, a lot of good things to like about him. He can cover, he can play against the run, but you know, he's one guy, you know what I mean? Like he's still struggled with the rest of this defense. He hasn't been able to make the impact that he's wanted to.
All right. In the defensive secondary, we got DeAndre Baker, Janoris Jenkins, Grant Haley, you'll be happy to hear, Jabril Peppers, and Anthony Bethea, and there's more to this cast of characters.
DeAndre Baker is their third first-round pick. So Daniel Jones was one of their first-round picks.
Dexter Lawrence.
Dexter Lawrence, thank you. I got Lawrence Taylor on the mind here.
Yeah, well, one of the, right. USA Today, one of the top 100 players in NFL history, I believe. He's number three.
Wow. And a former Giant, right, obviously. Yep. I think that's why he's on my mind.
Most famous Giant.
Yeah. But Dexter Lawrence was another
first... Once sawed a car in half in a movie. Maybe in real life, too.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Probably. Dexter Lawrence was their other first-round pick, but Baker's another former Georgia Bulldog playing on this defense. Most first-year cornerbacks struggle, and Baker's is no different. He's struggling. And when you're having problems up front, you're going to have problems on the back end, and he's suffering because of that. Jenkins is having a down year as well.
He's getting older as it is.
Oh, for sure. Haley, who's their nickel, is having a down year. They have a corner in Corey Ballantyne, who is another late-round pick. He was their kick returner, who's in concussion protocol, probably won't play. Preppers was brought over in the deal.
The OBJ deal.
You're right. he's underperforming, but he's in that strong safety role.
Well, Jabril Peppers underperforming? I never would have thought.
All right, well, let's not get me on a tangent here. Bethea is actually, he's a former Cardinal. He's okay. He's not great. He's no Landon Collins, right? Technically, Peppers is playing Collins' old spot, right? But he's all right. He's not bad. He might be the best player in their secondary right now. But this is a weak link on their defense. Yes, they can be run on. There's plenty of talent. There's plenty of names here that are talented, but they're getting run on. They're getting passed on. And if there's a big weakness, it's that the secondary is giving up a lot of passing yards. So I do expect the Lions to try and establish the run. One of the ways that Arizona was effective last week was doing like outside zone reads. So you can do that with speedy running backs, which you have in Ty Johnson and McKissick. So I'm expecting to see some outside zone reads to try and stress the running game. And then I'm expecting the Lions to attack with Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay. Both Janoris Jenkins and Baker, and I think even Haley, are all like 5'10 or under. I don't think any of them are taller than 5'10. Now,
small back.
I got to check out. I got to make sure. I mean, even Peppers is small, right?
Yep.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but this is just me going off my memory. When you put a 6'4 Kenny Golladay out there, they're going to struggle trying to get hands on him. So this could be a good game for Kenny Golladay.
Interesting note that I see on this page right here. Jabril Peppers and Anthony Bethea on the field 100% of the time. That's rare that we see that out of another team or even our own team. Two safeties.
Yeah.
You'd see one player. Mm-hmm. You'd see one player play 100% of snaps, but not both.
Yeah, and I think it just speaks.
You're not as impressed as I am. It's quite obvious.
I just think they have a game plan, and they like to load up in the secondary, and they like to be flexible up front, and these are your best players. So I guess I'm not overly surprised that they're playing those guys. I mean, even Baker and Jenkins and Haley, I think they played last week like 97% of snaps. So that these five players and that we're talking about in the secondary played almost every single snap there was last week. And now granted, some of that was because they were playing Air Raid Arizona, but this is just part of their strategy. They're going to use these, at least two outside corners and two safeties as much as possible because they don't really have a lot beyond those top guys.
All right, the special teams, they're coordinated by Thomas McGoy. The kicker's Aldrick Rosas. The punter's Riley Dixon. Not really much to write home about with either of them. Where everybody, who are Lions fans are going to be most, or in Michigan fans, are going to be most interested is when the Giants are returning punts, because we'll see Golden Tate, we might see Jabril Peppers.
Yeah, it's like a kick returner, right? They used Darius Slayton last week, I believe, on kick returns ahead of Peppers. With, like I said, Valentine's their usual starter, but he's been out with the concussion.
Very interesting that we could potentially see Darius Slayton running pass routes against Darius Slay.
Right.
We got a couple of minutes, and you have a very interesting article, or at least you're the most optimistic person I know when it comes to the Lions. And you're talking about the Lions' schedule odds of making the playoffs. Now, I had to remind Eric.
It's an upcoming article.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe we won't get into it.
No, we can.
But we discussed about how the Lions, in last place at 2-3-1, trailing the Bears, the Vikings, and the Packers within their own division, and many other teams across the NFC, into making it in one of those last two wild card playoff slots. And Eric's going to tell you how that's very possible that they could do that.
I do think it's possible. When you look at who they've faced, everyone talks about this being the tough part of the calendar. And it is. Right now, they have, of the six teams they faced, I think four of them have winning records. The other two don't. But then amongst the 10 remaining games that they have, only three of those teams have a winning record. Now, obviously, it's a week-to-week league. We've talked about this plenty of times before, and these records are going to change all the time. But when you look at the preseason predictions that the beat writers, that the Lions beat writers made, most of us had the Lions going 3-3 or 2-4 in these first six games. So it's not unheard of that they're sitting at 2-3-1. What's interesting is that even though most of us beat writers thought that they were going to come out with an, you know, a 500 or sub 500 record, most of us had them ending the season with a winning record. A couple people had them going 9-7. A lot of us had them going 10-6. And I think the potential is there. If they're going to get into the playoffs, they're going to have to win probably 8 more games. That will give them 10 wins and five losses and a tie.
Now, although it's very possible both wild card teams could be 11-5.
Right. It's very possible. Yeah, this NFC is stacked.
Pretty stacked.
Right now. It looks very stacked right now. But again, things change and things can change quickly. But the way things look now is they're going to have to win 8 games, 8 of their last 10 games to get into the playoffs. But again, I don't think that's unrealistic because...
I beg to differ, but well, we'll save that for another time.
And again, it's because seven of the remaining 10 games are teams that are 500 or worse than 500. If you can,
you got to play some of them on the road. Yep. You'll get some of them at home. Like you said, things change. One of the two of those teams can get very hot.
But the bottom line, I guess, for me is when I'm looking at this remaining schedule, and even though I'm saying they got to win 80% of their games from here on out, the opponents lend to that. There's 5 games in there that I think should be easy wins.
Eric's got a few locks on this list.
Yes, I think there's 5 games that should be easy, which means then you've got to split those other 6. And of those other 6, you've got to beat...
You've got 2 losses.
You've got to
split them.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, you're right. You gotta win... I'm 4 sorry.
And 2.
You got to win probably 3 of the games that are kind of going to be tough against even teams. And then you got to beat a team that has a winning record. And the 3 teams that have a winning record left on the schedule are the Vikings, who we've lost to.
They play in Minnesota.
The Green Bay Packers,
who they lost at home in the last week.
And the Dallas Cowboys.
Who they'll face at home in 2 weeks, I believe it is.
Maybe four weeks. Yeah.
With revenge game potential for the Lions, although they usually don't convert on revenge games.
So... if they can handle their business against these even teams, all you got to do is win one of those home games against Dallas or Green Bay, and there's a shot. That's all I'm saying. For those of you who are kind of packing your bags and ready to leave, I'm saying, hold on a second.
I'm not packing my bags. I'm packing my bags, but I'm staying.
There's a lot of people that want to cash in, and I'm saying, don't cash in yet. Let's see where it goes.
All right, who do you got? Who do you got on Sunday?
I don't think this is close. I think it's the Giants are going to get
destroyed. You think
the
Giants are going to win?
No.
They'll get destroyed.
I think it's going to be 27-20 Lions.
Okay.
Should say that you...
That's not a destroy.
No, but I could see it going the 30-20, but I'm not going to say 27-20.
I'll stay lower than you. I'll go 24-21 Lions.
Okay. Well, okay. Perfect. That'll be good.
So you can have anything big.
Yep. Which is exactly how I like it, because I think this is a game to go big.
All right. That's it. We have run out of time for today. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Got 5 more reviews, 4 more written responses for us. We continue to climb up to 244. Super appreciative. It's so helpful.
Let's keep it up. Thank you. Thank you to everybody who's reviewing, and thank you to everybody who's listening. And until next time, let's go Lions.